Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Here and Now, the Dawlish and Tynmouth Area Talker newspaper. Today is Friday the 2nd of February 2024, and the dark days of January are behind us, and we can look forward hopefully to the first days of spring in a few weeks' time. Before the headlines and our first story, I have some dates for your diaries. On Tuesday the 13th of February, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Firmoy's Garden Centre. For more information, contact 01626 88890. That's 01626 88890. And Tuesday the 13th of February is also Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Day. And pancakes at St Paul's Church Starcross are being served from 3 to 6pm. And it's 50 pence per pancake plus tea or coffee. And on Friday the 16th of February, Exminster Local History Society meet at the Methodist Church at 7:30pm for a talk on the rebuilding of Exeter after the Blitz by Claire Maudling. And this is Exminster History Society, not the Dawlish Society. Also, on last week's programme, a tribute was paid to Aileen Webster, a contributor to our Roundabout programme. Aileen's funeral will take place on Monday the 19th of February at 11am at St George's Church, Holcombe. Right, here are this week's headline stories. Hospital fight will go on. Banking hubs need to be quicker. Arrest made following spate of school burglaries.
Good morning. I'm Maggie West and I have the first story for you today. The headline, Fight Will Go On, Say Campaigners. It may not be the end of the fight to save Tynmouth Hospital, campaigners have said. While Devon County Councillors voted against the final referral of the decision to close the hospital, the first NHS hospital to be built in the country, the battle to save it could go on. Members of the authority's Health and Adult Care Scrutiny Committee voted last week not to go back to the Secretary of State for Health. The committee had been looking into the issue for more than 6 months, while the NHS was granted planning permission by Tynbridge Council for a multi-town health and wellbeing hub to include a new home for GPs in the town on the site in Brunswick Street. After years of campaigning to keep the historic hospital site open, this final opportunity had a near impossible chance of success, as no previous referral of this kind had ever been approved. With the committee's vote that avenue through the county council is now dead in the water, the reaction from dedicated supporters has been anger and sadness. They turned out in force again at County Hall to continue to show the strength of feeling for the hospital. But this may not be the end, as supporters look at other ways of preventing the closure. According to Tynmouth councillor David Cox, there is a chance of putting a notice of motion to Tynbridge Council asking members to support the authority's own referral process. Councillor Cox said, "Obviously, we're all disappointed, and it was sad news, but I believe the committee was swayed not by the arguments put forward against closure, but by GPs needing new premises, which is undeniable." Graham Bond, trustee of the League of Friends of Tynmouth Hospital, said they were extremely disappointed. He said, "We will continue to fight for Tynmouth Hospital to be retained, supporting local councillors and the residents in maintaining this invaluable asset, which continues to provide wonderful daycare." Speaking to County Council last week, Susan Cann, a former nurse at Tynmouth Hospital, said, "I started in 1954 as a young cadet and was there for 36 years. Every day I worked there, it was lovely. The patients were good and we just all loved the hospital. It was a lovely place to be. I think the idea of closing it is absolutely terrible, a travesty." After the decision, fervent campaigner Geraldyn Arthurs said many of the supporters were gutted. She said, "We have some work to do to get a referral via a different route." Long-time supporter Councillor Chris Clarence independent member and chairman of Teignbridge District Council, spoke at the meeting as a member of the public. He said, "We all know the troubles the main district hospitals are up against. We need more cottage hospital beds to help alleviate these problems." Disappointed by the decision, he said, "It was terrible, not what I was expecting. I was hoping the committee would stick with the original task group's finding to refer only for them to do a U-turn." Campaigner Viv Wilson said the hospital was an essential part of the community. She argued NHS plans for a new health and well-being centre in the town would not meet demand. She said the decision to close Teignmouth Hospital is wrong. The hospital is an essential part of the health and well-being of that particular part of Devon. Their proposal to spend £23 million on a health hub, which is not a hospital, just really won't fit the bill. County Councillor and member of the Health and Adult Scrutiny Committee, Councillor Martin Wrigley, said, "This was a final chance to save Teignmouth Hospital. I don't think the NHS responded particularly well to the concerns we raised." He described the decision to close cottage hospitals as short-sighted and will be looked back on as a very bad decision. And there are a number of pictures here of the protesters with their banners out in force to try and save Teignmouth Hospital.
Hello, I'm Linda Bowman, and my first article is entitled "Bank Hubs Need to Open Quicker," says MP. Opening new bank hubs needs to be speeded up, according to MP Anne-Marie Morris. As Teignmouth's last bank is poised to close in April, and Dawlish has been without a single bank branch for several years, there have been promises to open the new facilities. So far, while two sites are under consideration in Dawlish, nowhere in Teignmouth has been found to be suitable. Ms. Morris, who has been a vocal campaigner for access to banks, has criticised delays in establishing the hubs, which provide in-person access to high street banking. In September, after lobbying by Ms. Morris, Dawlish Chamber of Trade and the Town Council finance chiefs visited Dawlish to see for themselves how the town lacks banking facilities. Now, it has been confirmed that several options are being pursued by Cash Access, the organisation which is behind the new hubs. It is in discussion with a landlord over one building and has instructed a survey on another as a backup plan. An alternative location is also being considered. By progressing a range of options, Cash Access says it is hoping to have the best chance of getting the hub for the community within the 12-month time frame. In Teignmouth, there are no properties which meet Cash Access's requirements, which include the necessary square footage and accessible. However, Ms. Morris has some concerns over these criteria, which she believes are too stringent and without enough flexibility to allow for the local character of properties when looking for a permanent location, such as Teignmouth, which is in a conservation area. There are two options: to provide a temporary hub, which would mean meeting the 12-month time frame to deliver the service, or to consider reducing the footprint, which could mean only one counter position instead of two. Although the smaller site has never been achieved, Cash Access has said as there are limited options available, it could look into this. But Ms. Morris says this is unacceptable. She said, "It cannot be fair that the footprint of the hub shrinks along with the service provided, simply because the criteria used to find a permanent hub does not factor in the character of local premises." She says a new set of criteria should be agreed for the development of banking hubs. She explained, "There are lots and lots of barriers. You need to fight for a hub, and even if it's approved, it's down to Cash Access to find a property. But constraints to size and location mean it can be very difficult to find the right place. The hubs provide shared space used by 10 major banks and building societies,
similar to a traditional bank. They provide counter service operated by post office employees for cash deposits and withdrawals, bill payments and regular transactions. Private areas are also available for customers to speak to bank staff, with companies using facilities on a rotating basis.
Hello, I'm Lynn Yates, and the next article is Arrest Made Following Spate of School Burglaries. Police investigating a spate of burglaries at schools in Tynmouth and Dawlish have made an arrest. Officers have now confirmed there have been 7 incidents of burglary reported between October and January. The latest involved Gatehouse Academy Primary in Dawlish and Tynmouth Primary Schools, which happened over the weekend. All the break-ins happened when the schools were unoccupied. Forced entry to the buildings caused damage both inside and out. In the case of Gatehouse School's latest incident, the damage forced staff to close on Monday. In some cases, a quantity of cash was taken. At the first Gatehouse School break-in over the Christmas holidays, 15 Kindle devices were stolen. At the time, a school spokesman said, "The theft impinges on the provision we can offer our pupils and is very upsetting. The Kindles had all been wiped of information before storage, and they are security marked." Oakwood Special College has been broken into 3 times this October. Police say incidents were reported at Tynmouth Primary on January the 28th, Starcross Primary on January the 13th, Gatehouse Primary on January the 1st and 28th, and Oakwood College Special School in October, December and January. Following each report, police say officers have carried out inquiries and seized CCTV and other footage, which has been reviewed. A 28-year-old man from Dawlish has been arrested on suspicion of burglary and remains in police custody at this time. Sector Inspector Sean Roper said, "These incidents have had an impact on the school communities within Tynbridge, with some schools having to stay closed following the burglaries due to the damage caused. We have been working closely with the schools to carry out investigations at scenes where possible and seize any CCTV, forensics and make inquiries in the local areas. The neighbourhood teams have been engaged with the schools and I would like to thank them in their support of our investigations over the past few months. I'd encourage anyone with information or any footage which may assist us to keep reporting it. Anyone with information is asked to contact police by calling 101 or through the Devon and Cornwall Police website, quoting reference 502-400-22435. And I'll give you that quote a reference again. 502-400-22435. And with this article are 2 photographs, one of Gatehouse Academy and one of Starcross Primary.
The pong will go on for just a little while longer. Efforts to repair a burst sewer, which has been causing a stench in Exminster for months, are taking longer than expected. South West Water has told residents that the condition of the affected pipe was worse than anticipated. It means work using tankers to transport waste from the affected sewer to a local treatment works will take longer. Residents in the village had been complaining about the pong for months. After the issue was raised by County Councillor Alan Connett, who asked Tynbridge Council environmental health officers to investigate, and following inquiries to South West Water by Mid Devon Advertiser, workers arrived on the site. They said they were working to repair a damaged sewer in Exminster near Sanneville Way bypass. Now, Steve Hayfield, South West Water Customer Experience and Delivery Director, has told villagers, "We want to thank you once again for your patience while we continue tankering in the Exminster and Countess Weir area, and especially for the support shown to our teams. They've been working hard to get this burst fixed as quickly as possible. Investigations are ongoing. Since we've been on site, we've found that the condition of the pipe is worse than we expected. This led to further investigations, which in turn meant the repair is taking longer than we thought.
Parish Council grant helps get charity on the move. A Tynwyth charity was the grateful recipient of a new mobility scooter gifted them by local councillors. Tynwyth Shop Mobility was able to purchase the scooter thanks to a grant from Shoreden Parish Council. The charity provides mobility scooters, wheelchairs and strollers to give independence for elderly and disabled people accessing Tynwyth and its surrounding area, including Shoreden. Over the last year, a number of Shoreden residents and visitors have benefited from our service, a spokesperson for the charity said. We have two trustees that live in Shoreden and are able to deliver boot scooters when required. If users are unable to get to our premises in the Quay car park in Tynwyth. If you would like further details, please ring 01626 777775. That's 01626 777775, the spokesperson added. And there's a picture taken outside the London Inn, and there are councillors Chris Clarence, Lucy Bufton, Andy Burnham, Tim Palmer, Claire Stoyle and Daniel Westake. And the trustee, Brian Hamblin, is actually sitting on the scooter.
Swan Safety Zone. A footpath along the brook in Dawlish has been cordoned off as the town's iconic black swans have begun laying again. One egg has been laid in pampas grass last weekend and is being guarded by Dad Bert. Dawlish waterfowl wardens have set up barriers around the site as a precaution to protect the birds. A spokesman for the warden said, "Please do not feed them while they are sitting on the eggs on this nesting site." The wardens have tried to get them to nest elsewhere, but they are determined to stay where they are. Passers-by are being asked to be mindful of the birds while they are nesting. The breeding pair of swans have been using a specially created nesting site at Tuck's Plot, which was deliberately built to a high level to avoid being washed away during any storms or high running water. A few days before, the wardens took the decision to move three of the juvenile swans, which hatched last year, to a new local home. The spokesman said, "They were increasingly being chased by Bert into the road and other areas, and with the new cygnets doing very, very well, it was decided the best course of action was to rehome them. The three swans are now happily settled in their new home." And there is a little photograph here of the cordoned off safety zone.
Here's to the old apple tree. A ceremony lost in the mists of hallowed antiquity took place in Exminster last Saturday to ensure a bountiful supply of apples from the village orchard. The wassail ceremony was organised by Exminster Green Spaces, and numerous residents, many festooned with greenery, turned out to take part and support the event and help to keep the ancient custom alive. The word wassail comes from an Anglo-Saxon greeting which means good health, and the purpose of wassailing is to awake the cider apple trees and to scare away evil spirits to ensure a good harvest of fruit in the autumn. The trees themselves were toasted, literally in this case, with pieces of toast soaked in cider and pressed onto the branches. The Squire of Beltane Morris led the afternoon ceremony, which was kicked off by dancing from Glory of the West Morris, and music was provided by Sidvale Folk Choir, who sang a selection of traditional and modern folk songs to serenade the participants and the trees. And there are some lovely photographs here of the Glory of the West Morris saluting the apple trees with their sticks, Some of the support is with their greenery and their faces painted green, and a young lady called Eleanor Maynard making a noise by bashing a wooden spoon on what looks like a baking tray to force out any unwanted spirits from the trees. And beside her is a branch on which is a piece of toast.
Rotary donations help charities. Organisations in Teignbridge have benefited from a new round of donations from Dawlish Water Rotary Club. Before Christmas, the club donated a further £500 to Hitt's Food Bank, which has continued to see rising numbers of people in desperate circumstances. The club also pledged £200 to the annual Strand Centre Christmas dinner, which the club will now support every year. Ames Special Needs Group in Dawlish has also been given £400 for a new sensory tent and other activities, and £500 was given to the local group of Force for cancer support, which is also facing a growing need for its services. Rotary Club President Chris May said, "We are delighted to be able to assist these vital groups after a successful fundraising year." In particular, members congratulated Rotarian Steve Marsh for organising a bumper Christmas collection on the Strand, which raised £843.26, thanks to the continuing generosity of local people. Meanwhile, Club Treasurer Robin Buchanan has made a fresh appeal for any spare, unwanted foreign currency. Since last spring, Robin has managed to collect a whole range of currency amounts, about 80 different ones in all, amounting to £240. As a result, he was able, on behalf of the club, to make a donation of just over £80 each to Assist Teignbridge, the Strand Centre, and to Mind on behalf of Hayes Travel. Robin said, "If any readers have left over currency, coins or notes from their summer or more recent winter holidays, it would be wonderful if they could deposit the amounts in one of our collection boxes in the town. We will then be in a position to use those funds later for worthwhile charitable purposes. Collection boxes are situated in Dawlish at Hayes Travel and the Strand Centre and Assist Teignbridge at the Manor House, Old Town Street."
Police witness appeal after Kenford collision. Police investigating a serious road traffic collision near Kenford are appealing for any witnesses to come forward. Officers were called to reports of a single vehicle collision involving a car at Haldon Ridge between the A380 and the A38 near Kenford at around 4:45 p.m. on Thursday, January the 25th. It was reported that a blue Honda Jazz had left the carriageway and had been in collision with a tree. Emergency services attended the scene. The driver, a woman in her 20s, was trapped in the car and was extracted by the fire service. She was taken to Derriford Hospital with serious leg injuries. The road was closed while an investigation was carried out at the scene. It was reopened at around 9:30 p.m. Officers from the roads policing team would like to thank the public for their patience while the road was closed. If you witness the incident or have any information or dashcam footage that could help with enquiries, please contact police via our website or by calling 101, quoting log 512 of the 25th of January. That's 512 of the 25th of January. And there is a photograph here just of a police car and an accident notice.
E-bikes and drugs seized by Teignmouth Police. A pair of Surrey e-bikes, drugs and cash has been seized by police in Teignmouth. In the last week, the Teignmouth Neighbourhood Police Team acted upon recent community intelligence, resulting in two local males arrested for drug driving and possession with intent to supply. Drugs and cash worth in thousands were located during searches. The force, alongside the proactive unit and the No Excuses team, also seized high-value items under the Proceeds of Crime Act, including two Surin e-bikes. For those that need to be warned, a spokesman for Tynmouth and Dawlish Police said. This type of work will continue. And there is a photograph of the two stolen e-bikes on what appears to be a police pickup truck being taken to wherever they take stolen property.
Sticky situation for Newton firefighters. Firefighters from Newton Abbot were mobilised last Friday to assist in the rescue of a casualty stuck in river mud off Exmouth. The station's Environmental Protection Unit, EPU, and one fire appliance responded to the incident along with crews from Exmouth, Middlemore and the Brigade's Water Rescue Team, also based in Exmouth. A spokesperson for Newton Abbot Fire Station said, on arrival, one male was confirmed to be trapped up to his knees in mud, approximately 400 metres from the bank, within the estuary in Exmouth. The water rescue team, alongside members from Middlemore Fire Station, committed six firefighters wearing dry suits in order to rescue the stricken individual. Two team members went ahead with a sledge, as well as a mud lance, in order to release the male from the mud. The mud lance utilises compressed air in order to break the vacuum caused by the mud around the casualty's legs, therefore releasing him from the mud. The remaining four crew members used mud mats in order to provide a safe path back towards the bank for the casualty and fire crews within the estuary. Once rescued, the crews from Newton Abbot utilised the EPU to decontaminate everyone involved in the incident, as well as decontaminate the equipment used. The spokesperson added, the individual who was rescued was thankfully uninjured and in good spirits, if not a bit embarrassed by the whole incident. And there are two photographs, one of the fire engine's van in its red and yellow livery, and there's a picture of one, two, three, four of the firefighters standing on one of the mud mats.
Nelly is over the rainbow at top regional award. A budding Tinbridge musical student has scooped a prestigious regional award. While performing as Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, Nelly Mallett discovered she had been selected for Teen School's Helen Foundation Award. Year 11 student Nelly was appearing on stage at the Pavilions in Tynmouth in Sheldon Theatre Company's production when she found out. The award is presented by Tinbridge Schools for the best endeavour in the arts. As Nelly was performing in the show, she had to miss her Year 11 awards evening. Helen Foundation trustees, Annie and Roger Kirk, made secret arrangements with the play's director, Andrew Malcolm, who organised for the whole cast and stage crew to assemble in the auditorium after the performance. The realisation dawned on Nelly that the special gathering on stage of the cast was for her. It was said Nelly fought back a rush of tears as Roger read out a glowing citation for the THF award written by Teen School. To loud and prolonged applause, Nelly was presented with the award. Roger said, "It was a very emotional moment for us too. Our daughter Helen, the inspiration behind the Helen Foundation, had been a munchkin in Sheldon Theatre Company's first ever performance in 1987 of The Wizard of Oz when aged just five, which fired her enthusiasm to become an actor. The next time the company staged the play in 1999, Helen, then aged 17, played Dorothy with a real dog as Toto, and Annie showed Nelly the still sparkly red shoes that Helen wore when performing as Dorothy." The citation from Teen School said she was passionate and dedicated to the performing arts. She was given the award for her dedication throughout the school, having been in school productions, in the chorus and in lead roles, leading workshops for lower school, and was a drama ambassador in her final year. The school said, "She always put 100% into her drama lessons and was an amazing influence on the younger students." As they say in the industry, Nelly is a triple treat, as she can sing, act and dance to a high standard. We are sure she will go a long way as she pursues a career in the performing arts industry. And there's a very nice photograph here of the Helen Foundation trustees Annie and Roger Kirk, with Nelly in the centre looking very happy.
Library welcomes company's donation to collection. An independent and eco-friendly bookseller based in Newton Abbot has donated a significant number of books to the town's collection. Postscript Books has donated a number of railway books to Newton Abbot Library's railway collection. While steam trains and the history behind them are a favourite topic, the company has a broader appreciation of railway and transport books. This is well reflected both in their free monthly catalogue and on their website. We are delighted to accept Postscript's generous donation to the railway collection. Located at Newton Abbot Library, said Lynn West, Library Centre Manager. Whilst there are many items about the era of steam already in the collection, we are always delighted to add items relating to modern diesel and electric traction, she asked. Railway collection is comprised of 28,126 items on 220 metres of shelves. These cover diverse topics from books about engines, buildings, bridges and railway engineering to maps of tracks, diagrams of engines, track plans, timetables, including some Bradshaws, and around 90,000 photographs, many of which are unique. Much of the book stock is available to borrow, so do call in to browse during library opening times from 9 a.m. each morning, Monday to Saturday. The books that Postscript have kindly donated are being added to the collection and will be available shortly.
There is just one obituary. Anne James passed away peacefully on the 20th of January 2024, aged 89 years. Beloved wife, mother and grandma, she will be in our hearts forever. A Requiem Mass will be held at St. Agatha's Church, Dawlish, on Friday the 16th of February at 2 p.m, followed by Exeter Crematorium, and that's for immediate family only. No flowers by request. Donations to HCPT, and that can be accessed on www.hcpt.org.uk. A special thanks to the staff at Palm Court Nursing Home Dawlish for the loving care given to Anne during her time there. And more information can be had from Dawlish Funeral Care, Scala House, Lawn Terrace, Dawlish, EX79PY. And the phone number is 01626 862 426. And there's a short notice of an event. The Queen of History, Lucy Worsley, will be sharing stories from the fascinating life of the Queen of Crime, Agatha Christie, when she visits the author's hometown of Torquay next month. Lucy will present on one of the most elusive and enigmatic figures of the 20th century with her show, An Audience with Agatha Christie, at the Princess Theatre in Torquay on March the 13th.
Double header on the bill for Tynmouth Comedy Club gig. There's not one, but two headliners for this month's comedy night at Pavilions Tynmouth. Tynmouth Comedy Club's Laughing next Friday evening, February the 9th, will feature Rob Deering opening the night and Nick Page closing the evening. Rob Deering performs stand-up comedy with music, using a guitar, a loop pedal, and his voice to create impressive rock and pop soundscapes, and do jokes, of course. Along with being one of the most in-demand headliners on the UK circuit, he's toured nationally and performed solo shows at the Edinburgh Fringe many times since starting out in comedy in the year 2000. His late-night live music comedy, Pop Quiz Beat, His late-night live music comedy pop quiz, Beat This, is a festival institution on London's South Bank, at Wales Green Man, and many more besides Edinburgh. An experienced, versatile comic with a unique storytelling style, Nick Page won English Comedian of the Year in 2018 and got to the live finals of Britain's Got Talent. He has sell-out shows at Edinburgh Fringe and has performed in over 100 countries. Many of his stories are, mostly, true accounts of his bizarre life and make for a laugh-out-loud evening of hilarious entertainment. Tickets for the 8 p.m. gig are priced £13.50 in advance or £15 on the door, and there are two photographs of both the comedians.
Yeah. And now we have a report by Jean Cox for the Teen U3A. The weather at present may be cold and windy, but this has not deterred some of our 50 or so interest groups from getting out and about. Our Motor Manic group had a very successful and reminiscent outing to visit the new County Classics Motor Museum in Taunton. This eclectic collection of cars and motorcycles from the 1950s to the 1990s is the personal dream of local man Pat Hawkins, who has invested more than £4 million on the venture. Around 100 cars and 80 motorcycles are on display over two floors, and the visit certainly sparked many happy memories among the group members as they shared anecdotal stories from earlier days of motoring. Our new Handbells group rang carols at the Triangle for Christmas Lights Festival and also made a visit to Bodmin St. Petrock Church to hear more than 100 handbells play, which was delightful. At the December meeting of the photography group, the sun remarkably made an appearance before they all sat down to enjoy an excellent lunch at Scrummy's Cafe, Tynmouth Rugby Club. The birdwatching group's successful outing to Bowling Green Marsh, where mince pies were enjoyed by 16 members of the group, saw about 50 species of birds from the hide. The meeting of the Share IT group had a lively discussion around Apple iMessage app and had fun creating animated emojis of themselves. Also covered were how to pin important contacts, send handwritten and audio messages, as well as how to inform friends of where you are exactly. After playing at our Christmas Jingle and Mingle social, the ukulele group were delighted the first performance had been so well received, which made the extra rehearsals and nerves very worthwhile. The COP28 conference held in Dubai was discussed by our Climate Action group at their last meeting before Christmas. The group looked at the positive aspects from the meeting, which included a pledge by 130 countries to triple renewables by 2030, and also the subject of fossil fuels. Another lively discussion was held by the discussion group, covering a diverse mix of topics including grammar and semantics, weather forecasting, Alexa, the pros and cons of AI, charity requests, Christmas cards, barristers' fees, and justice. The meeting ended with dogs, or as Jane Hurley, group leader, describes, more accurately, their thoughtless and overindulgent owners. Serious topics with a good sprinkling of precious laughter included. If you would like to know more about joining Tynmouth and District U3A and our interest groups, please look us up at www.tynmouthu3a.org.uk. I'll give you that one again, at www.tynmouth, u3a.org.uk or email info@tynmouthu3a.org.uk. And there's an interesting photograph of the Tynmouth U3A photo group in front of what I think might be a specially created backdrop, because the grass is very green and the sky is very blue, and one of the gentlemen appears to have a palm tree growing out of the top of his head.
This is an article by Rick Purnell from the Tynmouth Probus Club. It's all change at the top as David Kirk, former treasurer, stepped up to the plate being installed by outgoing chairman Steve Battersby as 2024's Tynmouth Probus Club's chairman at the club's AGM. Our new chairman, Dave Kirk, retired as the Torbay Council's property officer and has hobbies of DIY, U3A, rambling and shooting. Other officers appointed were John Pearce as vice-chairman, and reappointments, John Polly as secretary, John Reynolds as treasurer, Terry Jackson as speaker finder, David Head as almoner, plus new to office, Chris Inch. The members respected the passing of five members: Terry Rogers, past chairman, Derek Alcock, past treasurer, Mike Castell, registrar, and life members Ray Gregory and Bill Kerr, all sadly missed. Four new members joined us in 2023: Andrew Crook, Hugh Comiskey, Tony Bile, and Ian Dodds. New members are always welcome. It was reported that 2023 was another very successful year, with an amusing limerick from the chair at each of our 18 interesting speaker meetings. The Christmas luncheon, hosted by Tradewinds Tynmouth, plus two outside visits to Tor Abbey, House and Gardens, and the Norman Lockyer Observatory in Seaton, with a tour of Exeter Cathedral from crypt to rooftops later this year. Our speaker finder, Terry Jackson, outlined another full list of interesting speakers for 2024, ranging from local history at Holden Belvedere and the Tynmouth Orangery to the work of the local magistrates and what happens after police use a firearm. The next meeting is on February the 7th at Richard Newton Hall Community Centre at 10 a.m. Our speaker is Roger Hamilton, talking about living on the edge. If any retired or semi-retired male readers in Tynmouth would like to know more about us, please visit our website www.tynmouth-probus-club.org.uk. And there's a photograph of the Tynmouth Probus retiring chairman, Steve Battersby, wearing his chain of office, handing it over to a very jovial-looking incoming chairman, Dave Kirk.
Police Doc Skye really does have a nose for it. One of Devon and Cornwall's police's four-legged members has been patrolling the school corridors of Newton Abbot. Along with officers from Newton Abbot Police Station, clever canine Skye, a highly skilled and trained police dog with a nose for sniffing out illegal drugs, paid a visit to several of the town's secondary schools last week in a bid to sniff out illegal drugs. Fortunately, none were found by Police Dog Skye and her handlers when they visited Newton Abbot College, Coombs Head Academy and South Devon University Technical College. This was an unannounced visit by the police that was approved by the school. The parents were notified this was upcoming, but no dates were provided, a spokesperson for Newton Abbot Police said. "We have done this before, and we will certainly be doing it again in the future. This is not to criminalise young people, but to put out a very clear message that drugs will not be tolerated anywhere in our community," the spokesperson added. And there are three photographs here. The team at South Devon University Technical College, and then again the team again at Newton Abbot College, and then there's a nice close-up of Skye little face.
Trust unveiled volunteer drive to preserve Dartmoor ponies. The Dartmoor Pony Heritage Trust has announced its upcoming volunteer drive, a dynamic movement aimed at nurturing a passionate community dedicated to safeguarding Dartmoor's heritage ponies. This call to action invites individuals who share a deep love for local history and a commitment to preserving the unique beauty of Dartmoor, including its iconic ponies. Volunteers are the lifeblood of their mission, contributing significantly to various facets of the organisation, from the maintenance of the charity's headquarters at Park near Bubby Tracy to hands-on involvement in conservation projects at Belliver, where they manage 82 hectares of moorland surrounding Belliver Tor within a 450-hectare expanse near Postbridge, owned by the Forestry England. There are several opportunities, such as organising events at the headquarters, habitat management at Belliver, and training as pony checkers to ensure the well-being of the managed pony herd. Debbie Leach, the CEO of the charity, envisions a vibrant cohort of volunteers who passionately advocate for Dartmoor and its iconic ponies. Volunteers can tailor their commitment to coincide with their schedules and other commitments, she said. Whether treating it as a dedicated role or contributing a few hours monthly, the crucial aspect is fostering a collective movement, an assembly of individuals united in championing Dartmoor heritage ponies. The volunteer drive extends its call to farmers and pony keepers, acknowledging their vital role as heroes in the mission. Farmers and breeders are an integral to our cause, and we invite them to join us, just as we welcome individuals from all walks of life. Regardless of background or prior experience, the organisation warmly invites volunteers to join the movement, not just to support Dartmoor pony preservation, but also to uncover a profound sense of purpose, camaraderie and belonging. And there is an absolutely delightful photograph of some of the Dartmoor ponies resting and grazing in their natural habitat. And I forgot to...
More parking charges increase. The cost of parking on Dartmoor is likely to increase this spring. Small increases in fees for using the moor's car parks are likely to be agreed by Dartmoor National Park Authority when it meets tomorrow. Members will also discuss budgets for the coming year, with a warning that cash support for the country's national parks is dwindling. The government says the parks need to raise money wherever possible to cover costs, and parking charges are among the ways they should do it. Car park fees currently raise around £160,000 towards the authority's work on the moor, and raising them will raise an extra £10,000. But the fees will only go up in line with the consumer price index, meaning the charges rise by pence rather than pounds. The authority only started formally charging for parking at Princetown in 2013 and at Haytor, Postbridge and Meldon Reservoir in 2018. Lidford and Brentor have since been added to the list. The charges currently stand at £3 for up to 3 hours or £5 all day. If authority members agree the changes, it will mean Dartmoor visitors paying £3.20 for up to 3 hours, or £5.30 all day. Coaches will pay £10.65.
Volunteers rack up their rescue hours. Volunteers from Ashburton's Dartmoor Search and Rescue Team put in almost 2,700 hours last year helping people in trouble. The Charity Rescue Group's annual report shows that call-outs were down by 30% in 2023. The 30 emergency calls came from requests by the police, but the group has also worked with all three full-time emergency services, as well as Coast Guards and sister teams across Devon and Cornwall. A spokesman said, "We continue to rely on our incredible volunteers to drop everything at any time of the day or night, in all weathers, to search for lost, injured, or vulnerable individuals." This would not be possible were it not for the support they receive from incredibly understanding friends, families, and employers. At the beginning of last year, after several years of intensive training, two team members became fully qualified mountain rescue search and rescue dog handlers. Their search dogs, Binny and Amber, now provide the team and the wider mountain rescue community with an additional capability to find missing or injured individuals. With only 7 call-outs in the year for those who were lost or injured on Dartmoor, one of these lasted for 11 hours. On this occasion, the rescue team was called out just before 8 p.m. on a Saturday evening. It was a dark, wet and cold autumn evening, and the volunteers were asked to help search for a woman who had become lost while hill walking near Riders Hill in the south of Dartmoor. She had been out since lunchtime, and just after calling for help at around 7 p.m, her mobile phone battery failed. In the end, this call-out involved more than 60 individuals from 6 different organisations, including our sister teams and the full-time emergency services. She was located just before 7 a.m. the following day, and apart from being wet and cold, in remarkable good spirits. During the summer, they were alerted to a man who had been hill walking on the South Moor and called for assistance after his dog was bitten by an adder and was seriously unwell. He was concerned it would take too long to carry his dog back to the car and then on to a vet. As the rescuers knew his location, one of the team vehicles was dispatched and picked up the individual and his pet. After spending overnight and most of the next day at the vet, the dog fully recovered from its ordeal. A spokesman said, "We continue to receive a similar proportion of calls from Devon and Cornwall Police to searching for vulnerable or despondent individuals. Our team members have also ended up responding to incidents in more unlikely places. During a trip to a local climbing wall, a group of our volunteers were present when an individual had a serious fall. Within minutes, the individual's injuries had been assessed by our team members, and it was suspected that he had sustained a fractured femur. As the climbing wall was close to our rescue centre, first aid equipment and pain relief was quickly obtained. He was then packed ready for transportation to a local hospital, where his injury was confirmed. He has subsequently made a full recovery." And there's 2 photographs here. There's one of a team leader's, I think it's his arm, with the Mountain Rescue logo on. It's a close-up so you can see clearly what it is. And the other photograph is the team getting ready to go out on what looks like a really miserable, murky, wet night.
That brings us to the end of this week's edition of Here and Now, recorded at our studio in Dawlish on Friday the 2nd of February 2024. We hope that you have enjoyed the programme. If you need to contact us for any reason, the telephone number is 07376 147 374. That's 07376 147 374. Please leave your name and telephone number on the answering service and we will ring you back. Our editor this week was Jean Cole and the copier and dispatcher is Jean Cole. The programme was produced and directed by Chris Edmonds, who said she's feeling a bit rusty in her production skills, but I'm sure it will all be fine. So it's time for us to say goodbye from our readers, Maggie West, Lynn Yates and Linda Bowman.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. And from me, Jean Cole. Goodbye.